It's my pleasure now to introduce Dr. Fred Short. Fred is an international expert on seagrasses, and we benefit from having him be our local expert on eelgrass. And Fred is going to speak to us on, give us an overview of the big picture that's going to set the tone for our next 2 days. Thanks, Fred.
This is exciting. I think this is sort of my dream come true. You know, I'm here at the meeting with, you know, a room full of people that all are interested in eelgrass. I get, you know, to talk about my favorite plant. I get an hour and a half to entertain you guys. Oh, no. All right, well, I better get going. Anyway, it is very exciting, and I welcome you all here. I'm going to talk about eelgrass, the big picture. Sort of depends on your perspective. I'm going to be looking, starting with the little picture and working my way up, hopefully, as I go through. And I've got to move quickly because I do have an hour and a half worth of slides and only 40 minutes. Eelgrass, the species, of course, is Ostra marina. It is a seagrass. There's about 60 seagrasses in the world. It's really the dominant one. It's of the those which have wide global distribution, it's the largest, the most vigorous, and the one that grows the fastest. All the seagrasses are vascular plants, and that gives them incredible ability to live in the underwater environment in a way that no other marine plants can. And they flower. And this vascular system and flowering is a result of their origin on land as terrestrial plants, and then sometime in the last 65 million years, they migrated back into the ocean and retained their vascular system, their roots and rhizomes, and their flowering system. What is eelgrass and its roles? Well, its physiology makes it a very unique plant, and I'm going to talk about that as I go through. But it's a very important habitat. It functions as an indicator in the coastal zone. It not only tells us what the plants are doing, it tells us what the whole ecosystem are doing if we monitor it, if we keep an eye on that system. And it's very important for the maintenance of the coastal zone. I mean, it does a lot of functions like holding sediments in place, reducing sediments in the water column, filtering out nutrients that helps to keep the water column and the coastal zone clear. Also, it has many threats, and most of them are of human origin. And that's really where we come in, and I think where we've got to start taking some action. There are major stressors. Poor water clarity is the big one. That's what eliminates it and destroys it from most places. But overuse of the coastal zone is another one which we have direct control over and something we can do. In terms of conservation and protection, we need to improve water quality, reduce nitrogen inputs, and reduce physical impacts and damage. It's the wrong button. So, as I mentioned, its primary requirement is clear water. If you give clear water, it'll grow almost anywhere. It'll grow on rocks, it'll grow in soft mud, it'll grow in really shallow water, and really deep water, if it's clear enough. What it prefers is 0 to 25 degrees and seawater to estuarine salinity, so not real fresh, but more of the higher salinity end, and either a sand or muddy bottom is preferred. And it tolerates a tremendous amount of pollution. It can grow in systems contaminated with all kinds of metals and PCBs and PAHs. It can grow in systems with nutrients to some extent, as long as the water stays clear. If the water stays clear, it mostly persists. And it tolerates a lot of human activities, although many of them damage it in one way or another. I think you all know what eelgrass looks like, and if you don't, you will by the end of my talk, because I've got pictures of every eelgrass bed that I've seen. This is in Great Bay, and you'll see as I go along, a lot of my pictures are from Great Bay, because that's where I spend most of my time. But I do trot around the world a bit also. This is the global distribution of this species, Ostra marina. As you see, it's throughout the whole North Temperate Oceans, from a southern distribution here in Baja, and on the east coast in North Carolina, in Beaufort, right at the South Carolina line, and it extends up into the Arctic. The most distribution is in, reported, is in Norway, but we think it grows up here in northern Hudson Bay and up into Greenland further. We just don't have very good records for that. So the green dots are data that have been collected back in 2003 and in the World Atlas of Seagrasses. We collected all the gray literature and published data and pulled it together and created a map for all the seagrass species, and I just pulled out the Zostra marina ones. The orange areas is just sort of the expected range, so the range that we expect to find it, even if it has, we don't have actual dots there. And that should be extended now into most of Hudson Bay here. And we think also up in here, but we have almost no data from Kamchatka and those areas. Closer to home, Great Bay, my lab is the red star there. This is an aerial view of the eelgrass beds, the dark beds here, right off the bay. Very extensive, high dense beds, at least they were back in the 90s when I took this photo. As you can see the beds very easily from the air. At low tide, these are all exposed, so these are intertidal beds. And that's valuable because it allows us to monitor them easily and tell over time. At the global picture, eelgrass is declining, seagrasses are declining in general. And this is a publication that we're working on right now. It's currently in a review process, looking at what's been reported in the literature for seagrasses on a global basis. And the highlight is seagrasses are declining. And the decline really started about in the 70s and 80s and has gone down extensively since then. We're, of course, most interested in this area, and that is one of the areas that shows the many of the decline areas. Currently, 58% of the sites that we had identified from literature surveys were showing decline. So that's fairly dramatic. drop back now more to the plant, the ecology. It's, of course, submerged and intertidal. It lives in low salinities. It won't grow in fresh water. It won't survive in fresh water, but it does down to 3 or 5 parts per thousand and up to full-strength seawater. It flowers, it actually pollinates fruits and seeds underwater. The distribution is from temperate to Arctic, as I said. And the it's important in nutrient cycling, both within the sediment and within the water column. It's a filter in the estuaries and coastal areas of nutrients and sediments. It's a food source for waterfowl, many invertebrates, some fish. It's habitat for many, many species, both commercially important species and the non-commercial species, in terms of breeding, nursery, feeding area, protection. And these species